sight is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let us podcast, let us podcast, let us podcast. Welcome to the Tekinuk Podcast. This is episode number 14 from snowy cold Canada. I'm your co-host for the show, James Cogan, joined as usual by Canadian pro blogger, Mr. David Peralti. David, hey, you freezing over there in St. Thomas or what?
Yeah, it's getting pretty cold. It's definitely starting to feel like Canadian winter. I wish I had a fireplace, that's for sure.
Yeah. You got a lot of snow in St. Thomas?
No, this area is not really well known for getting a lot of snow. We get the lake effect, which kind of pushes all the snow away from us, unfortunately. But hopefully we'll get out and get some skiing done this year, because we haven't done that for a couple years. So.
Very nice. Well, there's certainly no shortage of snow here in Ottawa. But anyway, you know what? Enough talk about snow, because we got a jam-packed episode, so we got to get right into it. And let's get right into our first talking point. November 27th, 28th was a two-day conference in Toronto called Next Media. Both David and I were there, and we had a really wonderful couple of days. It was really fun to be there. Daily Pixel was part of that conference and was really just a terrific event. And David, just some comments on it. I mean, any takeaways? I mean, what was your experience about this conference in Toronto?
At first, especially on the first day, I kind of felt like it was a lot of big companies that really want to know what the heck was going on online and how they could monetize all the things that they were doing. Throughout the second day, I started to realize there were a lot more people that understood what was going on than I originally had guessed, so that was kind of nice. I don't know, you know, it's definitely a changing landscape. It's definitely interesting to hear their opinions on what's going on. Some of the sessions were a little bit basic, but I think the real takeaway is that, you know, big companies are interested. You know, the Canadian online space definitely is growing by leaps and bounds, and, you know, there's a lot of interesting things going on. One thing that you missed out on was the CRTC open session sit-down thing.
I did, and I'm really bummed I missed that. I had to catch a 5:30 flight, and I'm curious to know how that went.
You know what? It's so funny, because by the end of it, there were more questions than answers. How do you categorize what is considered, you know, online media? Is it the stuff that's only generating revenue, or how do we, you know, police this whole kind of emerging market, and how do we make sure that Canadians are well represented on it? Mm-hmm. Will Pate stood up and basically told all the panelists and the people watching from the CRTC or whatnot to stop being afraid, just let it go. We're pretty much the only country that's paranoid about this kind of thing. And whether or not we're Canadian doesn't really matter if we produce great content.
Yeah, I would second that 100%. Now, we should say, I mean, the theme for this conference was monetizing digital media. So in the sense that, you know, yes, there were definitely companies out there that were trying to sort of get a handle on this, and therefore there were basic presentations, because there in the audience there were companies that really needed a basic presentation on how they were going to monetize this. You know, some of the interesting things for me, number one, yeah, certainly the growth in the Canadian landscape. It was interesting to hear, for example, Pierre-Carl Pelladeau from Canoe talk about their plans for the Canadian web and their foray into online video. So that was really, really interesting. I thought it was a great two-day event. Like you said, it was sort of a grab bag of a whole bunch of different stuff, but at the end of the day, the through line of it all was online media with a little bit of a Canadian bent to it. So that was a wonderful conference. The real highlight for me, I mean, there were a couple of presentations that really stood out, and I think you'll agree with me. One of them was Lloyd Alter's presentation from treehugger.com. This guy, I mean, this was amazing. He went up there and he talked about Treehugger, which I didn't know was actually founded by a Canadian-born individual who was living in New York. And, you know, he went up there and he talked about Treehugger, like how it started, the genesis of the idea, and talked about the growth of it, and not just the things that, you know, were really going well for Treehugger, but also the things that the missteps that they made and the mistakes that they made along the way, and the challenges that they faced with advertisers and now with their acquisition of the Discovery Channel. I mean, this was a real honest presentation, and it really blew me away. He was just phenomenal. Would you agree?
Yeah, totally. And if you looked around at the end of his session, everyone was leaning in to hear what he had to say, because he was definitely the most candid and the most honest approach in any of the sessions between the 2 days. And I think that out of any of the sessions, despite all the data that other people had and despite all the, you know, the promises of growth and the whole nine yards, he really, you know, gave it to them how it was for them and how it could work out for all these other companies that are interested in doing something similar. And yeah, it knocked me off my socks. Like, it blew me away. It was amazing.
Yeah, and I also thought the last last presentation, which was the panel with MSNBC's director and Leonard Brody from NowPublic.com and Jonathan Dube and Matthew Ingram. You know, I thought that was, you know, anytime you talk about news media and citizen journalism and these guys in particular, I mean, they all had something really interesting to say. And, you know, I've been a big fan of NowPublic's from the very beginning. And, you know, anytime Leonard talks about citizen journalism and the new role of news media, I think everybody listens to what Leonard has to say because he speaks so well. So I thought that was really, really good panel to finish off the conference. Did you kind of like the way that finished?
Yeah, although, you know, it's so funny because you're sitting there and I'm, you know, I've been a blogger basically for the last 2 years, full-time paid by networks, and I'm listening to these guys, you know, hope without hope that, you know, all these traditional mediums are going to stick around for a long period of time. And I'm just shaking my head on the inside going, oh, if only they would, you know, come to grips with what I consider to be reality and embrace some of these new formats. So yeah, it was a really great session as well, but I didn't necessarily agree with everything they had said.
Yeah. But anyway, overall, great conference. The next media is going to happen in June in Banff, Alberta. I will definitely be there. And David, perhaps we can get you out for that one as well. But I'm definitely looking forward to the next installment of Next Media.
And each one kind of centers around a different kind of focus or topic, right? Like the one in Alberta actually isn't about monetizing digital content. It's about something else, if I saw right on their website.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. They do have sort of a different motif for each conference installment. So that's also cool because, if you're going to cover online media these days, it should be changing, right? Because the landscape is constantly changing. So, you know, I think it's great that they have a conference that does sort of change the theme of the conference each time they have one. All right, next talking point. Let's jump right in. Facebook. Haha. Again, we love talking about Facebook, but this time, you know, we were talking about growth and we were talking about all the good things that Facebook has to offer. And now, of course, there is a groundswell of negativity facing Facebook, and it obviously centers around their Beacon ad program. And, you know, there's a blogger here in Ottawa. Her name is Danny Girl. And I really hate the term mommy blogger, but she is a mom and she blogs, but she's got an award-winning blog. She's a wonderful blog and a wonderful person. And she made a blog post, I think it was sometime in late November. And to me, I read this blog post, and as soon as I read it, I knew Facebook was in trouble. And I'm going to read a little bit of what she wrote. And again, dannygirl.ca, DANIGIRL.ca. I'd recommend anybody to read it. But here's what she had to say about Facebook. A not so hypothetical situation. It's the Christmas season, and you're doing a little bit of online shopping. You click on over to Amazon or eBay or another one of 40 or so sites, and you make a purchase. And the next thing you know, all of your friends, in quotes, on Facebook get an update in their Facebook news feeds. Danny Girl just bought season 6 of Smallville on DVD from Amazon.com. What? You didn't see the little pop-up window warning you that your purchase was about to be added to your Facebook account? Oh well, hopefully that friend that you were buying the gift for doesn't read his news feed that day. And if that weren't creepy and disturbing or Orwellian enough for you, how about the fact that you are automatically signed up for this feature, and to opt out, you have to do so on a case-by-case basis? And then she goes on to say, imagine it. Trojan condoms with extra sensitivity now available from Amazon.com. Danny Girl just bought a box yesterday with my profile pic right next to it. I mean, that, in essence, sums up the problem with Facebook Beacon. And of course, Facebook has recently made some changes to sort of rescue this, I guess, trouble that they've got themselves into. But David, I'm wondering, I mean, what's your take on this? I mean, is Facebook now in trouble?
Well, you know how I feel about all the privacy issues. We've covered that in previous podcasts, and I'm not a fan of anything kind of taking over control of what information I decide to put out there. But at the same time, you know, information is pretty much free and open. If you want to find anything online, you can if you try hard enough. But this goes a little bit beyond that. As far as I've heard, they've gone ahead and turned it to the off setting by default, and you actually have to turn it on to kind of let people know what your purchases are or other things along those lines. But yeah, this was not the smart moves we have come to expect from Facebook. This kind of leaves them open to a competitor to come in, and I think we'll kind of touch on that more as we talk about Facebook, that, you know, now that they're making missteps, they're really going to get rid of the audience that they have finally created and not be able to monetize it well. They're all going to leave before they have a chance to make any money off of it. So I don't think that was the brightest move they could have done. You're not really a Facebook person, and we've mentioned that before as well, but, you know, this has definitely got to bring you one step further away from even wanting to try it.
Yeah, no question. And I mean, my knowledge of Facebook is obviously through reading up. It's of interest to me, but I'm not a participatory member of Facebook, but I'm certainly reading that advertisers are opting out of this system. Bloggers are sort of starting to become anti-Facebook and are leaving or not, or sort of deactivating their account. Mothers like Danny Girl, you know, she's starting to question whether or not Facebook's a good place to be spending her time. So I'm wondering, you know, everybody likes to compare sort of things that sort of fade away to Friendster, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, is this a real, real problem for Facebook, or is this just a blip on the radar screen?
And no, it's a huge problem. Huge, huge, huge.
Okay, but you know what? You say that, but here's an interesting thing. I just read a post from Compete.com, and they said that for the month of November, unique visitors to Facebook jumped 20%. So here you've got all of this negativity surrounding Facebook, and that's real. I mean, this is happening. We're not just, like, making this up that people are leaving Facebook. They are souring on it, and yet their traffic is increasing. Go figure.
But that's with everything on the web, right? Like, I've seen, or if you go to TechCrunch or IZEA now, or PaperPost, they just recently released a post saying, oh, thank you, TechCrunch, for all the negative posts you've made about us, because now we have 100,000 members. You know what I mean? Like, any negative press gets you some traffic. It's as simple as that, especially if the negative press is on big enough sites. So I think what you'll see is a huge downward spiral after this whole thing kind of blows over a little bit, and the ground roots bloggers decide to kind of say, you know, I'm pulling out, I'm going here.
But, you know, are the grassroots bloggers, you know, the diehard bloggers, they're not really the core audience for Facebook, are they? I mean, you know, the base level internet user that wants to make connections and wants to meet friends and catch up with people they haven't met in a long time, that's the core Facebook audience. And maybe just by making that one decision to make it opt in, maybe that's enough to keep the growth trajectory going. And I think maybe the real lesson here for Facebook, and I think it's a lesson that every startup and every company that sort of matures and grows to sort of hit that sort of mass scale, which is what I think every startup really wants to get to, is if you're the founder of that company, I think there's a point almost in any venture that you've sort of founded where you've got to be introspective and you've got to be able to look at your bag of tricks and your talents and say, am I the right person to continue to lead this company? And I think what's becoming more and more evident here is that maybe Mark Zuckerberg has reached that point with Facebook where he's not the right point man to be running Facebook. And if he's got as much brains as I think, you know, everybody thinks he has because he came up with this or, you know, stole it, depending on who you ask. But, you know, maybe Mark Zuckerberg needs to look at himself in the mirror and say, you know what, I've taken this thing as far as I can. And the nice thing about where Zuckerberg is that if he does decide that he's no longer the right person to lead this company, he certainly is going to have no shortage of top talent to choose from to take his post. Would you agree with me that maybe this is simply a case of Mark Zuckerberg reaching the end of his line as the CEO point man for this company, and it's time to redefine his role?
Wow, I hadn't even thought about that. You've gone in a whole different direction with the whole thing. And yeah, you know, if you don't kind of evolve with your audience, you kind of evolve away from them. And this and other things are kind of proof of that. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head that could do it better, but if something doesn't change, like I said, they're definitely leaving room for a competing product to come and kind of take some of their audience.
Well, if you read a news release tomorrow that said, you know, Zuckerberg has stepped down and XYZ is now in control of the company and hopefully XYZ brings to them a huge track record and whatever, wouldn't you think that that's a positive move for this company?
Honestly, as a Facebook user, I wouldn't give a damn. You know, what do I care who's running the place as long as they're not doing things that annoy me?
Mm-hmm, but Zuckerberg is doing things that are annoying people,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly.
So anyway, that's interesting. All right, next talking point. Technorati was the be-all and end-all search engine for all things blogs. That was years ago, and I think it's safe to say that over the years, Technorati's influence and relevance has eroded, and I think it's somewhat evidenced by the leadership issues that they had. Dave Sifry, who was the founder of Technorati, has since left. There was a bit of an issue there, and Technorati has redesigned a bunch of times, I think, over the last couple of years. The most recent one was maybe 6 or 8 months ago. Well, today, they've relaunched again, and they've made some changes, and the changes are aimed at sort of catering more towards their hardcore blogger audience. David, truthfully, I haven't really been an avid sort of Technorati visitor over the last little while. Maybe you're in a better position to sort of judge this repositioning of Technorati. Did they do a good job? Is this going to save Technorati?
Is it going to save them? Probably not. Did they do a good job? Yes. You know, I'll give them tons of credit for finally realizing that their blogger audience is what they should be focusing on. They're kind of a blog search engine, blog ranking system. To move away from that was the stupidest move they've ever made. I've pretty much ignored every other part of the website website except for searching and seeing the rankings of different blogs. So I'm really glad that they're going back to their roots. I really hope that they stick with this path, and I really hope that bloggers will kind of give them a second chance at doing this right. Because if we all bail on Technorati now, maybe they'll go back to their less blog-centric ways, which would make me very frustrated as a user.
Yeah. Now, I mean, in some ways, I mean, Technorati was one of the sort of first aggregators, sort of content aggregators that came along. Now, certainly, if you look at the landscape today, I mean, one would have to almost surmise that aggregation is the new fad online. You know, TechMem, obviously huge. You know, everybody in the tech geek community now checks TechMem on a regular basis. It's just a blog aggregator, essentially, or I shouldn't say blog aggregator. It's a news aggregator that has blogs and mainstream sources, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm wondering, David, you know, did Technorati kind of miss out on the aggregation sort of, and are other people just doing it better than they are now?
Yeah, I would totally agree with you there. They, like, by switching gears and trying to concentrate on, you know, pictures and audio and movies and all this other stuff, they have really missed the boat. And, you know, people are looking for ways to cut out the crap online. They want to find the best articles about whatever they're searching for. And before Technorati kind of went off and said, oh, we're going to broaden our horizons, that's what they were. Everyone went there. You know, you would search for a keyword, you'd find all the blogs that were talking about certain keyword, and you'd be happy. Mm-hmm. You go do that now, a couple of months ago, and you'd be very sad or very annoyed with the results. And that's why other sites stepped in and they kind of filled that niche gap, mm-hmm. Like TechMem and all these other sites that have become popular. And I think that, you know, if Technorati would have been smart and looked at something like Dig and some of those other places and TechMem and you know, all the other places that have jumped on board to do this, they could have refocused a lot sooner and capitalized on the need that was there.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not just making this up, right? The LA Times just made an investment in an aggregation site like Dig called Mix, M-I-X-X.com. Are you familiar with Mix, David?
Yeah, a lot of people are actually running over there really fast to kind of join that community because I guess it's supposed to be, the new in community right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you ask Mike Arrington, it certainly is. But it kind of makes me wonder, you know, there's sort of that tried and true cliche, I guess, to say content is king. And now I'm wondering, with aggregation sort of becoming the new fad, maybe we got that one wrong. And maybe it's not that content is king. It's content and context together are king. Because, you know, content is important. You need it. And there's so much of it out there now that content in and of itself, without context, without organizing, without making sense of it all, without sifting and editing and all that stuff, maybe it's not just content is king, it's content and context. Would you agree with that?
Totally. And I think that's really where the whole blogosphere is heading. Finding, you know, everyone wants to find the best content. They don't want to have any crud in their RSS reader. They don't want to have, one of the biggest trends that talking to bloggers lately is how they've reduced their RSS feeds down to just the essentials, or
yeah,
how they only visit, you know, 3 or 4 websites to get all their news from hundreds of sites. It's because people only want the best of the best of what they're looking for. And no matter what blog you have, you're never going to be 100% best of the best. You'll have posts that people aren't interested in and they don't want to see them. They want to be able to skip over those. And these services allow that. So.
And it's funny because, you know, when a couple of years ago, you know, when Scoble or whatever, you know, it's like the big macho thing was to say, oh, I read 2,000 feeds a day. You know, now the in thing is to say, I barely read 50 feeds, because it's all about sort of, like you say, it's all about sort of getting to the cream, and it's not about just how much information you can possibly take in. It's about getting the good stuff, right?
Yeah.
All right, next talking point. Ho, ho, ho. Haha. It's holiday season, and holiday season means it's gift time, and it's dreaming of fun electronic gadgets and all kinds of stuff. David, I know you're a bit of a gadget freak, and you like your video games and all that stuff. I'm wondering, number one, I mean, what's on the horizon in terms of, what are the things you're looking at? What are the things that you think are going to be hot this holiday season? And then I'd also like to ask you a little bit about video games and where that's at, because, you know, we haven't touched on that in a while, and I know you've got probably a lot to say about that. So I guess, first of all, what's on your radar screen? I mean, what do you think is going to be hot this year?
Well, you're making yourself sound a little bit old, because I know that you're looking at a new laptop finally.
Yeah. That's definitely on my radar screen. My 12-inch PowerBook G4, as much as I love it and its size, I'm realizing I'm not able to get that much done on it. So, that's number one on my list. I really would like a new
laptop. And I think that's going to be on a lot of people's list this year, is getting a new notebook. You know, getting a big tower with big monitor and the whole nine yards is kind of going the way of the dinosaur a little bit, and now it's the time for the notebook to reign. And it's been that, like, shifting that way year after year, but I think this Christmas you're going to see a lot more more of that. Dell is releasing a World of Warcraft version of one of their laptops, which is a whole bunch of people all excited, but doesn't really do anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
The other things that are going to be big, as usual, are digital cameras and stuff like that. People are definitely, in Canada especially, drooling over the eventual release of the iPhone, which still hasn't hit our shores yet.
Unbelievable, right? I mean, this has been released now in numerous countries, and here we are in Canada with quite a bit of pent-up demand for it, and it's just still not, it's nowhere to be seen. We're still a third world country hacking iPhones, you know? What's going on?
It's funny because it's still seen as an if rather than a when.
Mm-hmm.
If the iPhone comes to Canada, it will be with Rogers and it will be not cheap, but it's still a device that everyone wants, and a lot of people are going down to the States picking one up and getting them on Rogers right now already, so you know, it depends on how much you really want it.
Right.
You know, Apple products are going to be huge. They've done an amazing job with their marketing. They've just released another video to try to capitalize on the fact that people are switching away from Windows Vista.
You got
to
give them props on that campaign. I mean, they've got a lot of legs out of that campaign, and it was brilliant. You know, it was really sock it to the groin campaign. You know,
and their latest commercial, you know, like their last set of commercials really didn't impress me all that much, but this latest one with PC pretending to be Mac on the phone, telling, you know, the magazine company that they made a misprint by saying that Windows Vista runs fastest on a Mac. Oh, it had me cracking up, and they're just brilliant. So every kid and their brother and their, you know, uncle and the whole nine yards, they're going to be buying some Mac product this year, probably.
Yeah, and I've certainly seen it in my sphere. I've seen, you know, households and people that have really only known PCs are all going Mac. So, you know, it's definitely, I can see it happening in my sphere, so I'm assuming that's happening around other people's social sphere as well. You too?
Yeah, it's amazing how much the uptake has been, actually. And, you know, even if you go back to our original episodes, I kind of always, you know, bashed you a little bit for being such a Mac official. Aficionado and a Mac addict, and you know, here I am on my MacBook Pro.
Aha, so, there you go.
You know what I mean? Like, it definitely is the item to put under the tree this year. And the other one, of course, is taking a look into the gaming industry, and the Nintendo Wii is still the hot item. And I feel like we said this around last Christmas.
We
you
did.
Know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It blows me away. They're still having such shortages that, you know, there's still that need factor, that craving factor to have a Nintendo Wii. So,
and still, it's the activity aspect of Wii, right? The interactivity of it and the motion of it, that's still sort of the killer feature, right?
Yeah, and now they're releasing... You have to laugh at some of the things as an adult that they're releasing for the Nintendo Wii. Like, they're releasing this platform that you balance on, and it's going to be called Wii Fit, and you'll do all these different exercises, and you'll gain points that way.
Wow.
And you know, they're trying to capitalize on both the health and gaming aspects of trying to, you know, bring those two together, and it's just been absolutely hilarious to watch. But they're doing it, and people are lining up to buy it, so...
Yeah, I had a bit of a funny moment with my children, because I've got a 3 and 4 year... I got two boys, 3 and 4, And I was thinking back to when I got my first computer or first video game system, and I know I had the Atari 2600 when it came out years ago, but I must have been, at that time, I must have been probably 9 years old or something like that. And my first computer was a Commodore 64, and I was probably into my 10th or 11th year when I got that. And my 3 and 4 year old kids have these like little, they're called Leapsters, which are basically like Game Boys for 3 and 4 year olds. And I'm looking at these 3 and 4 year old kids with video games, handheld video games, and I'm just, it's such a head scratcher for me. Like, what are these guys going to be doing when they're 10? Never mind what I was doing. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's definitely a real shift. And you know, it's interesting to see what people are putting under their trees this year, because I remember when I was a kid, you know, the hot items were things like, you know, Legos or simple things like that. And you go to like a Christmas tree now, and my cousin is getting, you know, games for his PlayStation 2, new DVDs, stuff like that. And it blows me away how much technology is under the tree these days.
I'm wondering, though, you know, and this is totally somewhat a bit of a rant or off topic or whatever, but I'm wondering, you know, is there any connection to a generation that, you know, has a short attention span to the video games that they're getting into, and so much, you know, fast-paced, I need this now, I want information now, I want to do this now? Do you think there's a connection there?
I would blame the internet more than I'd blame video games for that, because I don't know about you, but if you've ever tried to sit through some of the video games that are out today, you're looking at 60, 100 hours of content.
Whoa.
You know, so these require huge time commitments from like 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds, and it totally blows me away, because at 8 or 9, I would probably build my Lego model and destroy it 6 different times.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, over the course of an afternoon, I swear people thought I had, like, obsessive compulsive disorder or, like, ADHD or something, because I was always just going and going and going. But is there
more value in the fact that you played with something, one singular thing, over and over and over again, and got full value out of it and really mastered it? Whereas it seems like this generation of children today never really master anything. They move on so quickly.
The next bigger, better thing.
Yeah, they don't really stay in one place long enough to really get max value and to really sort of, you know, really hone a skill or finish a game or finish a puzzle. It seems like before they finish, they've got something else that they want to do and they're running off to. Is that fair?
Yeah, and it's definitely, even for older people, you know, like, but I think the marketplace has decided to start to capitalize on that fact, right? Because you have games like World of Warcraft or EVE Online that have no traditional ending.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You can come back and you can play it whenever you want. You can leave, you know. They continue to nickel and dime you to death, and they're happy because they get a bunch of revenue, and you're happy because, you know, there is no end to this game, and they release expansion packs, and it makes it fresh and new again. And, you know, it's interesting to see how that whole marketplace develops around the fact that we don't necessarily master anything.
Now, David, I mean, the holiday season's coming up. I mean, is there anything in particular for you personally that you would really like to get?
Oh,
the list is long, right?
Yeah, it's actually getting scary long. You know, as a blogger, my biggest thing now has become storage. So more hard drives is one thing I want. More screen real estate, so getting another LCD, because prices have plummeted on those.
Right.
You know, 22-inch screens can now be had for under $250, and that's just, you know, unheard of.
Wow.
And 24-inch is dropping fast. Like, I remember when they were $8.99, now they're like, you can get them for like $3.99 at some places for a 24-inch. So
that's right.
You know, prices have halved in the last year. So it's perfect time. If you need a bigger monitor, now's the time. Some better podcasting equipment's always nice, but that's kind of a little bit geeky as well. Trying out some of the new games. Assassin's Creed has, you know, huge, huge, huge happy reviews about how amazing the graphics and the immersion is, yet how stupid the gameplay is. So I want to try it out for myself and see if it's one of those things that, you know, are must-have or a must-garbage.
Now, speaking of game titles, Halo 3 came out not too long ago. David, obviously Halo's a well-played game. A lot of people play it. But there does seem to be a little bit of a, ooh, Halo 3 is not that good or it's overrated. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I was actually really surprised because everyone was saying, oh, Microsoft's going to do it right. Halo 2 sucked. Halo 1 was amazing, but Halo 3 should be amazing as well.
Mm-hmm.
They had such huge competition, and they just couldn't beat their competitors. And everyone said, meh, Halo, so what? Everyone would rather play some of the other games that came out around the same time or before that were just, you know, a much better title. And, you know, there's actually so many of them, I can't even think of one off the top of my head, because just before Halo 3 came out, I don't know, there must have been half a dozen or a dozen different competing titles that got way better reviews and definitely got a lot more mindshare in the community.
Well, you know, that pretty much brings us to the end of Tekkenuck Podcast. Before we head off, David, is there anything you'd like to finish off with, any final comments?
I'm still writing down all my thoughts from Next Media, so if you want to check that out, I have a list of where I'm posting all the posts at slashpress.com.
Okay.
It's taken me forever because there was just so much content at Next Media, so hopefully I'll have all those out by the end of this week. I'm just starting day number 2, so
wow.
It tells you, you know, there's just so much to take away from that conference. You guys definitely have to check it out.
All right, will do.
And what about yourself?
Well, on the network front, you know, this is almost the end of 2007, but the first quarter 2008 going to be some really big stuff for DailyPixel.ca, so stay tuned to DailyPixel.ca. We've got some big announcements, some big launches coming up very shortly into the new year. I'm really, really, really excited. Well, you know, that brings us to the end of Tekkenuck Podcast number 14. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. For David Peralti, I'm James Cogan. Until next time, we are off.